Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzschrauber, your host. Before we start today's show, I want to let you all know, as I mentioned a couple episodes previously, that we're trying out new equipment. We've upgraded the stuff we use to record the podcast in an effort to up our game and better serve you, the listener. And in that vein, I want to know what you think of the show. Are we covering the issues that you care about? Do you have guests that you'd like to see on the show? Do you have topics you want discussed? Do you have a question you want answered on a future episode? So let us know at media@techfreedom.org or tweet at us at techfreedom or post a message on our Facebook page on Tech Freedom. And we really do value your input. So please don't hesitate to reach out. On today's show, Uber and Lyft have ceased operations in Austin, Texas. Back in December, the Austin City Council passed a series of regulations that the two companies felt were pretty burdensome, so they backed a popular ballot referendum to overturn those regulations, and that vote failed. And in response, rather than complying with the regulations, the two companies have decided to leave the city. What does this mean for the future of ride sharing in Austin? Will other cities learn from this example? Joining me to discuss this is Jared Meyer, research fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and he's got a book coming out next month called Uber Positive: Why Americans Love the Sharing Economy. Jared, thanks for joining the show yet again.
Thanks for having me, Evan. If I could have one point of feedback, you need more Uber on the Tech Policy Podcast. We just don't talk about it enough.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you are our most frequent guest other than the supreme leader of tech freedom, Baron Soka. But Jared, so what exactly happened in Austin? What were these regulations that the two companies found so burdensome that they were willing to shut down operations in the city?
Well, back in December 2015, the Austin City Council passed some regulations that applied to transportation network companies or ride sharing companies. And the main beef that the companies had with these regulations was that all the drivers would have to go through background checks that require fingerprinting. Now, make no mistake, Uber and Lyft already voluntarily make their drivers go through pretty extensive background checks. But the fingerprinting is something they want to stay away from, not only because fingerprinting really isn't that effective as a background check tool, but also because it would take a lot longer and be more expensive for Uber and Lyft to bring on new drivers. One of the things they need to do to keep up with the ever-increasing demand for their services. So they decided to make really this a line in the sand. They said, we are not going to go forward in Austin if you keep these regulations, because there are plenty of other cities who are contemplating putting in the same things. So they really spent a lot of money, over $8.5 million in Austin, trying to defeat this, and they were ultimately unsuccessful. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with other cities now that they kind of see a path forward to regulate these companies.
So the counter argument from those who support the regulations and from the city council is that taxi drivers in Austin have to get fingerprinted. So why should there be a different standard for Uber and Lyft if the goal is customer safety? And if knowing more about the drivers is generally going to lead to more safety, knowing if they have a criminal history, why shouldn't Uber and Lyft have to get, or Uber and Lyft drivers have to get fingerprinted in a background check if the same thing applies to taxi drivers?
Well, two things. First, I agree with people who drive for taxis and complain that they had to get fingerprinted while Uber and Lyft drivers don't. And even a lot of the proponents of the regulation said this was about leveling the playing field. But there are two ways you can level the playing field. One is erecting more obstacles on new technologies, and the other is bringing down regulatory barriers that exist on legacy transportation companies. So rather than making Uber and Lyft drivers go through fingerprint background checks, why not loosen it up so that taxis can use the different services that Uber and Lyft use to do their background checks? And on the point of safety, it's already working pretty well. I call this regulating in search of a problem. There's really nothing wrong with ride-sharing safety record, especially when you compare it to taxis. And for one, I mean, the business model in general is not conducive to crime. You would have to want to get caught to either be a rider or driver who commits a crime in an Uber or Lyft. You're being tracked the whole time, your identity is verified. And that's why they've had such stellar safety records. So you're just putting additional costs that will make ride-sharing's business model less effective in really not even helping public safety at all.
So have the companies Uber and Lyft pointed that out? I mean, maybe it would make their argument more credible if they were willing to go to bat for the taxi companies and say, hey, we don't want you to be regulated in a stupid way either. I mean, do you think if maybe even inserting that language into the proposition, do you think that would have helped? Or because the concern was so much about safety that trying to pass a rule that removes fingerprinting for taxi drivers would have run into the same problem?
I'm not sure what it is exactly, but it was that was definitely not in the language of the ballot initiative that they put forward to try to strip away some of the parts of the regulation that they thought were the worst. But I think it is a path they have to go looking at forward as they're going forward. If we look right now, Uber has had a checkered history, to say the least, with taxi companies. They've been battling each other from city to city, but there are a lot of taxi drivers who would be open to a lower regulatory standard that would allow them to really innovate and compete with Lyft and Uber. Unfortunately, the main people who are driving this opposition aren't your everyday taxi drivers. They're the people who own the permits that allow taxi companies to exist. So in Austin, for example, I think there's only in the high 600s for the number of taxis that exist in the city. This is a very low, artificially low limit, and only three companies own all of the, you know, so-called medallions, kind of like what they have in New York. So you have a very closed market, and these three companies want to protect their profits by pushing out Uber and Lyft.
But if the people have spoken twice, arguably, so you had the Austin City Council, which is made up of elected representatives of the people of Austin, and to the extent that that wasn't democratic enough, we now had a proposition on the ballot, direct democracy, a plebiscite, or to see if these regulations would stand. The regulations have now passed. They've been upheld by a referendum. The people have spoken. So if Uber and Lyft want to leave just because the people of Austin have had their voice heard and decided that this was what they wanted, I mean, do you see a problem with that?
Well, Austin needs to lose its kind of what it's known for, being a home for tech-savvy millennials, if they actually do not want Uber and Lyft without having the companies apply with a bunch of stupid, pointless standards. But one thing that's interesting about the referendum, only 17% of eligible voter or registered voters showed up. So even though to get on the ballot in the first place, Uber and Lyft got over 65,000 signatures, they only got 38,000 votes. So people who wanted to keep Uber and Lyft, they're your typical millennials who just don't show up to the ballot box when it matters. So this is far from the mandate that Austin's mayor is painting it as, of saying, now, you know, the people have spoken, we need to regulate Uber and Lyft more heavily. Again, only 17% of people showed up, and it still was a fairly close vote, 54 to 44 against Uber.
And it wasn't just fingerprinting. The regulations also included a requirement on where drivers could be picked up and dropped off. What was that about?
That was about Uber and Lyft contributing to traffic congestion. So what they were saying is you can't stop in, for example, a bus stop or stop in a lane. Like, I know when I'm hopping out of an Uber, usually I'm just like, hey, pull over here. And if there's cars parked on the side, I'll just jump out quick. So that was one of the regulations. I don't think that's the be all end all. That one you could have some justification for. But also they were making the companies pay more in fees to the city based on how much taxis were having to pay in fees. And they also had a bunch of other regulations, how often someone can drive, what type of training process you need. And of course, Uber and Lyft, they want some level of regulation just so that they could have legal certainty moving forward. But Austin really took it a step further in all that they piled into this bill that passed in December.
And of course, Uber and Lyft have also created mechanisms in their apps to deal with the problem of picking up and dropping off in less than ideal locations, because it's obvious that there are places in a city where it makes sense to pull over and let people out and where it doesn't. I mean, I know when I get Ubers at my office on Constitution, a lot of times the drivers have to go around the block two times while they wait for me because the cops and the Capitol Police don't let them stop. And in San Francisco, I noticed when I was getting Ubers, I was out there for a work conference, it would give me the option to improve my pickup by clicking on a little green dot. So if I said I wanted to get picked up at this location and it was a street that was the cars weren't allowed to go on or was only for buses or trolleys, the app would tell me. So there's clearly an opportunity for self-regulation here. But like you said, it was really the fingerprinting that was the issue here, not the picking up and dropping off. Now, there was one more regulation that I found interesting, which is that the city wanted all cars that were driving for Uber or Lyft to be clearly labeled as working for a ride sharing company. Is there one problem I can see with that is that people shouldn't necessarily have to announce to the world that they're driving for Uber or Lyft. Maybe it might help with knowing that that car might be pulling over, or there's value to knowing that a car is a taxi so that you could be more careful when you're biking behind it and things like that. But of course, we've seen taxi drivers intimidating Uber and Lyft drivers. You see that in Europe, where Uber and Lyft drivers are afraid to drop off passengers near taxi drivers. That happened to me in Amsterdam, where a taxi driver said, I'm going to go on a different block because I don't want to, or I'm sorry, an Uber driver wouldn't let me out where I asked him to. He said, I need to go one block down because he saw a taxi driver and he didn't want him to get into a fight with him. So there's probably a privacy concern there, but were the companies concerned about that requirement, or was that not really the heart of the issue?
I haven't seen too much on that. And also, I think just in America, we haven't had the level of violence that we've seen in Europe for taxi drivers attacking Uber drivers. So here, again, I don't think that's really the problem. The companies really chose to make their stand was over the fingerprinting requirement. And one of the reasons for this is they obviously, as I said, need to bring on people very quickly. It takes a long time and you get a lot of, you know, false positives where it comes back that someone was arrested, then never charged with any crime. Yet, because police don't keep up with updating the fingerprint database to the FBI, it comes back as a positive. So this is something that's going to lead to a lot of people, if Uber and Lyft come back to Austin, applying to drive for the companies and then not being able to get a job, even though they were never charged with or never found guilty of any crime.
Yeah, this is a criminal justice issue. We've seen the movement to ban the box in just normal hiring, not even the fingerprinting issue, just any arrest record or criminal record can really prevent you from getting a job. And one of the benefits of companies like Uber and Lyft is that people who had a criminal past would have an easier time driving for them, because the only thing that mattered was their ability to drive and the safety, and not necessarily that they got arrested for something and never convicted. And I think in your op-ed in Forbes, which we link to in the show notes, it's a great piece. I recommend you go and read it, listeners. You say that 1/3 of felony arrests result in nothing.
Yeah, no charges, not even bargaining down in a plea agreement. Just 1/3 of felony arrests lead to not pursuing the charges. So this is something that could actually have a major effect. And I should point out, Uber and Lyft, I think both the companies have, if you were convicted of a felony in the last 7 years, you can't drive for the company. But even the Austin taxi companies, through regulation, they're allowed to hire someone convicted of a felony. And even if it's a capital offense and things like this, that they said that they could still work for the company in the future. So it's kind of surprising looking at the double standard and seeing that people are just applying regulations to Uber and Lyft that don't even apply to taxis. And speaking of ban the box, it'd be really interesting to set up a Venn diagram where you could figure out people who support ban the box, but also support the new regulations on Uber and Lyft. And I bet it's a large percent of the people who voted in this election or voted in this initiative. They also want to asking about criminal history and employment.
I'm guessing there's also a correlation between people who support Bernie Sanders and fail to get out to vote for the proposition to keep Uber and Lyft in their city. Because as you say, millennials love to spout about politics on Facebook, but then when it comes time to getting to the voting booth, they seem to be missing in action. But the immediate impact of this decision by Uber and Lyft to leave is that at least 10,000 Uber drivers will lose their jobs. And I'm guessing that doesn't count those who drive for Lyft. And of course, the purpose of the regulation is public safety. That's what it always is. There's always usually a good intention behind regulation. But the irony here is you're arguing that this will actually decrease public safety. How so?
Well, one thing it would do is, if you look at Austin, believe it or not, downtown Austin has the most bars per capita out of any downtown. So they have a substantial drunk driving problem. Last year, they had the most deaths from road accidents in Austin's history. So you need more options that are safe, affordable, and convenient for people to get home after a night out drinking. And Uber and Lyft provided just that. Because Austin's one of the few cities with publicly available taxi data, you can see that the number of taxis on the road drops pretty sharply right at midnight. So this means when people are trying to get home from the bar, there's fewer taxis for them to be able to take. And when I looked at Uber's data in New York City, I found that Uber from about 8 p.m. till 1 a.m. was higher than even at the morning rush. So drivers get out when people are trying to get home from the bars. So if you're taking this away, taking away this transportation option, you're going to lead to more people dying in drunk driving arrests or drunk driving accidents or getting arrested for driving drunk. You need these options that have shown themselves to be able to fix a major public safety problem.
Is there any evidence to suggest that Uber and Lyft, where available, reduce instances of DUI and vehicular death?
Yes. If you look in California, Uber did an analysis with Mothers Against Drunk Driving that looked at areas that had UberX and those that didn't. And those that had UberX had a very significant drop compared to the other areas in drunk driving arrests and traffic fatalities. The same thing was seen in Portland. So this is becoming a pretty widely accepted argument in favor of ride sharing, is that it lowers drunk driving. I remember they did one survey and it found, I think, 87% of people said that having the option to take Uber makes them their friends less likely to drive drunk. I'm really wondering what the other 13% were thinking, if it makes you more like, you know, just hop behind the wheel of an Uber and start driving. But it clearly, when people have more options, they make better choices. And with something that's as dangerous as drunk driving, taking away something that has done a great job to try to alleviate this problem is really the public safety concern that Austin policymakers should be worried about.
And of course, traffic congestion is also a concern. Carbon emissions are increased when cars are all idling in the street. So there's an environmental concern here. And when you have a lot of people driving for Uber and Lyft, there's data on traffic that are collected, and that could be helpful to departments of transportation around the country, whether at the local, state, or even the federal level. And the companies have shown a willingness to share that data if it can improve public safety, reduce traffic congestion. So there's another lost benefit. And it seems like the city really screwed up here, because they lost a lot of jobs. As you say, it's really ironic for a city that claims to be a booming tech city, and it is. There are people there moving there all the time. I forget what the number is, if it's 500 a week or 500 a month, but a lot of people are moving to Austin, and it's really got a nice, vibrant tech sector, but this doesn't really send the right message. And a lot of the people that want to move to Austin to work in the technology industry are used to taking Uber and Lyft, and they're in for a rude awakening when they show up and they realize they're going to be reliant on legacy transportation options, which aren't always ideal.
Yeah, and there are some small startups. I think there's between 3 and 5 that have been trying to operate in Austin. So we'll see if they pick up. But again, it will be interesting if they decide to comply with the regulations. It's going to be a lot harder for them to meet customer demand. And clearly, they just don't have the networks built out that Uber and Lyft do. So there's going to be a major adjustment period, assuming that Uber and Lyft keep their paws in operations going, which, again, I think they're going to. They're making this really the battle they're focusing on. Because if they lose here, they're going to lose all throughout the rest of the U.S.
But so I guess there's two ways to react to this as a lawmaker. You could say, okay, I can get away with passing fingerprint checks and the voters will uphold that via popular referendum. But if the result of that is that a major employer in your city decides to leave, wouldn't that send the signal to lawmakers in other cities that maybe we shouldn't do things like this? I mean, do you think it's going to be more of a lesson learned in a good way or a lesson learned in a bad way?
It depends. With government policymakers, I never know what type of lesson they're going to learn. I think they're going to take away the opposite of what Mayor Bill de Blasio did in New York, where when he tried to go up against Uber, he lost pretty badly, but it never actually made it to the polls. So what this could show, unfortunately, is that people are big fans of Uber, and they get really angry when government gets between them and their Ubers, but they don't get angry enough to still go to the polls. So one thing I was thinking, maybe Uber and Lyft should have paused their operations before the vote and let people know, hey, if you don't get out, this is going to be every day from now on.
Yeah, or do what Uber did in New York City, where they had a very cheeky mode on their app called the Blasio mode, and it would say no cars available, just to make the point that if regulations like this go into effect, there'll be fewer drivers on the road. Now, going forward, there are a few scenarios. Uber and Lyft could decide, you know what, screw it, we'll just deal with all this BS, even though we hate it, because Austin is a big enough market and it's worth it for us to do it for business reasons. Or they continue down the current path and say, no, we're done, we're leaving, and it's not changing. Or we could see Austin realize their mistake and undo these regulations, or the state come in and preempt the local laws. Where do you see this going?
I think the state's going to come in. So state lawmakers in Austin will decide that with this city really going rogue, and then Houston actually passed fingerprint requirements as well. And that's why Uber pulled out of the city, I think in November 2014, and Uber's been threatening to leave as well. So when you get a patchwork of different ride sharing regulations, it makes it difficult, especially when you have closer together cities like we see in, for example, Long Island than New York City, because the drivers are driving between the areas. Or look at, you know, the District of Columbia with then Virginia and Maryland right there. When you have so many different regulations, you notice that there's some problems going on. So the trend is really towards state lawmakers putting in a statewide regulatory framework. And I think this is what's going to really prod the state lawmakers in Texas to put in a more reasonable statewide framework.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that Austin is the capital of Texas, and when lawmakers get out of their session and realize they can't get an Uber home, they might get pissed enough. And when things hit close to home, policymakers are more likely to actually realize the problem than when they're so far removed from it. But Texas State Senator Charles Schwertner has already announced that he intends to introduce a law to regulate ride sharing at the statewide level. So we'll be tracking that. And if there's any further developments in Austin, we'll probably be talking about them on the podcast. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Jared Meyer, research fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's the author of a book coming out soon called Uber Positive, Why Americans Love the Sharing Economy. When is that coming out, Jared?
June 7th. We finally have a date.
All right. So we'll have you come on the show to talk about your book and see Jared's op-ed in Forbes about the Austin situation. We link to it in the show notes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. And you can find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. Please leave us a review because it will help others find the show. And thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.